Welcome to the weekly Dharma Talk podcast from the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling Buddhist Meditation Center. This week's Dharma Talk is entitled Making Friends with Your Meditation, Part 3, by Lama Kathy Wesley. After we've been meditating for a while, we might experience some relief from our grosser mental afflictions. But what's next for us in practice? In this talk, Lama Kathy reviews the difference between understanding, experience, and realization, and shows us how to deepen our meditation practice. If you like our Dharma Talk series, please consider donating to Columbus Karma Teksum Choling at columbusktc.org. Enjoy the podcast.
Okay, good afternoon, everyone. Thanks very much for joining us today. Thanks to all my friends on YouTube, and thanks also to all of my friends on Facebook. I'm coming to you from my shrine room here in Ohio, and I want to thank you for joining us today and to wish you well wherever you are. And it's been a great way to spend our extra time in quarantine. Now, I know that quarantine is coming to an end in some places and that there's a lot of people who are feeling anxiety because of this. And it's my hope that our work together can help a little bit as we continue to work on our collective inner stability, working to become a little bit more calm, a little more peaceful, and a little more helpful to both ourselves and others. So that's what we're about, and that's what we're trying to do. So thanks very much for being part of our community here at Columbus Karma Teksum Choling. Now, what I've been working on the last few weeks is we've been working on the topic of making friends with your meditation. And so what I'd like to do today is summarize that topic and talk about what you can do with your the mindfulness that you've developed through the practice of meditation. So that's a little bit about what we're going to be discussing today. Meanwhile, I wanted to also remind you about this book, Kenpo Karthi Rinpoche's book, Excellent at the Beginning. Excellent at the Beginning is where I have taken most of my shamatha teaching materials from. So it's something that you'll be able to purchase and then also to use in your own everyday studying. Now, I did ask for questions for today's talk, and if you have other questions, you can write them to me. It's difficult to like talk and read the scroll on Facebook at the same time. So I'm going to try something different this time, and I'm going to give you the address. I'm hoping this is not backwards, because I'm given at Columbus KTC, columbuskTC.org. So if you have any questions from today's talk, you can either put them in the comments of the Facebook page. Sorry, I have comments disabled on YouTube because I can't follow them while I'm filming. But you can send me those questions at ktc.org, and I'll try to read them at the conclusion of the webcast today, and then answer them online for you, or answer them online next week. So now that we're here, let's start with a period of quiet meditation, only a couple of minutes long, as we sort of wind down from the activities of the morning and get ready to talk about meditation this afternoon. I'm going to start by reciting a brief prayer in the Tibetan language. If it's a prayer with which you're familiar, you can join in and sing it along. Or if it's a prayer with which you're unfamiliar, please, you can join in your heart and in your mind, thinking that you dedicate this period to the benefit of yourself and all sentient beings. O sanje chudang so ji cho nam la chang chu bar du dan ni kyap su chi
Da ji jin so ji pe so nam ki. Dro la pen chu san je dru par sho.
And now I'll recite a short prayer of my own, and then we'll get started.
Oh, palin sawe lama rinpoche, tagi chi war pe de den shula. Kadrin jembo gane che sunte. Kusun tugging a trip sal to soul.
Okay, thanks very much. So today we're going to pick up where we left off last time, which is on the topic of making friends with your meditation. Before we start for today, I would like to start with a brief period of quiet sitting. And this will give me an opportunity to review the technique of meditation for those of you who weren't able to be with us previously, and to give a refresher for the folks who have already heard the instruction. Briefly, meditation is about placing your attention on an object, in this case, the breath, and leaving your attention on that object for as long as it naturally will last. And this may only be a few seconds, and then it will, then your attention will wander either into something that happened before or something that's going to happen tomorrow. And when your attention wanders, the work of meditation is to practice the technique called touch and let go, where you touch the distraction, the thought, with your attention. You can even label it thinking. You let it go and then consciously return your attention to the breath for a fresh start. And that you do this again and again and again. In other words, you start with a period of attention that eventually dissolves into a distraction. And then you notice the distraction, you drop the distraction, and then return your attention to the breath for a fresh start. So we're going to practice this technique of meditation now for just a few minutes. And then we'll start with the presentation. You can, when you sit, if you're sitting in a chair, you sit with your feet flat on the floor. If your feet don't touch the floor, you put a small cushion between your feet and the floor so your feet touch. You place your legs hip width apart. And then you can slowly rock back and forth on your cushion, establishing your seat. After you've established your legs and your seat, then you can place your shoulders, hands, and arms. The shoulders should be straight. The hands can be placed palm downward on the legs, or to be placed with the thumb at the base or the first joint of the ring finger enclosed in a light fist, also palm downward on your legs. So that's the legs, the seat, the back, the shoulders, hands, and arms. The chin can be tucked in slightly, which puts the gaze downward. And you can either gaze at a small area a few feet ahead of you, or if it's easier for you, you can close your eyes. So in one way or the other, you allow your eyes to come to rest, either gazing generally at a space in front of you or by letting your eyes close lightly. You start with excellent at the beginning, which is the excellent motivation that you're going to meditate for the benefit of yourself and others. And then excellent in the middle is starting with one deep breath, breathing out, and then allowing your breath to come and go naturally, following your breath with your attention as it comes in and goes out. And then returning your attention when it wanders. And then excellent at the end is going to be the dedication of goodness. So we'll start with a short meditation, placing the body in the position of meditation, starting with the motivation of benefiting others, taking a deep breath, breathing out, and then allowing the breath to come and go naturally. We'll sit quietly for just a couple of minutes. Okay, that's a short period of meditation. Usually starting like this is a good idea, because what happens, I think, often is that we have very busy days. And because we have very busy days, our mind, it takes a few minutes to settle down once we've sat down to meditate. And that's why it's really good to start out with some quiet sitting and then get started with your study period. So what we spoke about last week was the technique of meditation and how to work with obstacles that arise in meditation, specifically the obstacles of drowsiness and agitation. If you remember, for the drowsiness, we used a technique that was shared by Kempo Carter Rinpoche in his book Dharma Paths, where when a person is drowsy, they straighten their body a bit, and if their body is overly warm, they cool it by opening a window and so forth, and then they can brighten the mind by imagining that in front of them in space there's a shaft of white light, and that one breathes up into the white light, and then the breath comes down to one from that white light in the form of white light. Then it illuminates the body from the inside and dispels the drowsiness. We also talked about the antidote for agitation when the mind is kind of running and jumping like a monkey mind, and recognizing that if one is experiencing the monkey mind, that one can actually use another technique, which is to imagine that in the earth, in going out and away from you, is a shaft of darkness, and that your breath goes down into the shaft of darkness and then comes up, and it's a strange image to think about with your imagination. It illuminates your body with a darkness, and in this way, you can gradually dispel agitation. Also with agitation, if your body is overly cool, you warm it up a little bit. And if your posture is overly rigid, then you relax it a little bit. So those are the things that we talked about last week when we were talking about remedies that we can put to use in our meditation practice to dispel the agitation and the drowsiness. Now, this week, I gave you a preview last week that we were going to be talking about about what happens next, the experiences that can arise when one meditates, and also how to work with the experiences that can arise in meditation. And in fact, one of the questions that was shared this week was shared by a viewer on Facebook who said that she had an experience in which she was sitting and meditating, and while she was sitting and meditating, there was a figure that appeared in front of her, and she had some feelings or emotions with that figure who she imagined to be in front of her, and what should she do about this kind of experience? And I'm really glad that she shared this, because this sort of thing does happen to people when they're meditating. Part of the reason for this is that meditation is an unusual activity for most of us. In fact, we're not really used to meditating. We're more used to continuous distraction, having something always going on, either in front of us or in our heads. We can't let a moment go by that we haven't filled with some kind of stimulation, either from our cell phones or letters or things we're reading or things we're watching on television and so on. So because our minds are not used to being without continuous stimulus, then when we sit down and try to meditate, our minds aren't really equipped for that. And so what our minds might do instead is, as we relax, as our attention relaxes, we could actually have things appear. Several people have told me that when they're starting their meditation, the space in front of them will undulate like a mirage at the side of a road on a hot day, or They will experience, they will see shapes in the wallpaper or the carpeting and things like this, and that those shapes will become distracting. And I've, and so what I can tell you about this is that we did speak with one of our great masters of the Karmakaju tradition, His Eminence Taisitu Rinpoche, about this. We did ask him about this sort of phenomena and how to work with it. And he said that as your eye muscles relax, he said, this is an unusual thing for us. And as our eye muscles relax, things will begin to shift in our field of vision, but that we should not be distracted by the things that are shifting in our field of vision. We should let go of fixation on those objects, let go of the fixation on the shapes that appear and so forth, and return our attention back to the object of meditation, which for us is the breath. Just return to the object of meditation and continue the technique of meditation. In other words, he said, don't be distracted and pulled away from your meditation by anything that appears to you. He says it's just a function of your body relaxing and your neurons relaxing, and that it's not something to get excited about. And part of the reason that we get excited about it is that many people have in the front of their minds, they have an expectation that when they meditate, something amazing will happen, or something great will occur, or they'll have some type of insight burst upon their minds, and that they'll have an unusual experience. And because they're set up for this, then when they do have an unusual experience, they immediately fixate on the unusual experience, thinking it's very special. And then in so doing, they put their meditation off balance, they leave their object of meditation and go into a type of fantasy. And so they end up having a great fantasy meditation, but they don't really have a meditation meditation. And I think that this is also true of people who have said to me that they are psychic. I have met quite a few people who are psychic and who say that when they meditate, they have visions, and when they meditate, they receive prophecies and things like this. And then I've also met people who are creative, artist people who, when they relax, when their minds begin to relax, they instantly start thinking of things. They'll think of song lyrics that they want to write, or they'll think of fiction or novel that they want to write, or they'll think of a picture they need to paint. And so forth and so on, or they'll get ideas, and they are then distracted by these ideas. If you remember from our initial discussion of what meditation is and what it is not, meditation is not fantasy. It's actually learning how to be with yourself in the present moment through being with the breath as it comes and goes. And so this idea of being with yourself in the present moment, we get distracted from that when we have an experience of a psychic phenomena or the experience of our imagination or our creativity. And I spoke to Kenpo Karsh Rinpoche about the creativity before, and he said that that this does happen when our minds become relaxed, that ideas that we previously would not have thought of do begin to arise in the mind. But he says it's important not to let those great ideas take you away from the actual practice of meditation. So his suggestion to people who asked about this was that they make a mental note to themselves while they're meditating if an idea comes up that they think is valuable. You're sitting there meditating, and then suddenly you have an idea about something you need to do or something you'd like to create. What Rinpoche said to do, he said, is make a mental note and tell yourself, program yourself that when the meditation is over, I will come back to this idea and I will write it down then. In other words, making a mental note that in the future, when meditation is over, that you will then write down the idea. That way you don't lose the idea. And if you do, then it will come back at some point in the future. And so that's how he encouraged people to work with their ideas, their creative ideas. But what I've come to say to people who experience psychic phenomena when they or visions and things like this when they meditate, I tell them that in my experience working with people learning meditation, that sometimes creative people and psychic people have these things arise for them that other people don't have. And so in a way, people who have psychic capability actually have more things to let go of than an ordinary person would. Ordinary people only have to let go of their thoughts, their feelings, and their emotions. That's all they have to let go of in meditation, thoughts, feelings, and emotions. But then people who experience psychic phenomena or who are sensitive in other ways, they have more things to let go of. But the practice is still the same, whether you're letting go of a vision or whether you're letting go of a thought, it's the same thing, the same mechanism. You use the same mechanism of noticing, letting go, you can label it, thinking, let it go, and then return to the technique for a fresh start. I used to be of the belief before I spoke to Rinpoche about this, that ideas were important and I should write them all down. So I had a pad. I actually had a pad of paper next to my meditation seat so I could write down good ideas because I was a writer. And one of my own meditation students sort of shamed me on this. And she said, "Don't you think that there is no idea that you could possibly come up with that would be worth one moment of good meditation?" And I had to agree that she was actually right, that it's not worth an idea, no matter how good it is not worth giving up my meditation for. So this goes to show you that no matter how long you've been meditating, you can always learn something from your meditation students. So in other words, all of the experiences that can arise in meditation should be noticed, noted, and let go of, and then the technique returned to. This is very important because I had a friend, and when they started meditating, they began to see pictures of Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, and they got so distracted by it that they then entered into a fantasy meditation that then turned into a big story, and then they came away from the meditation thinking that maybe they were enlightened. And so they had a great fantasy, but they didn't have a great meditation. And so they came to me about it after a while because it started bothering them. And I had to tell them, "I'm really sorry, but it's a fantasy and you do need to let go of it." And some of them find that easy to let go of and others don't. So it's better to work with it now while it's fresh and new than not. And I think I shared with you the story that His Eminence Thaisich Rinpoche told about when he was a preteen boy studying Buddhism with his tutor, that when he would meditate, there was a Buddha image on his shrine, and at one point he thought the Buddha image was looking at him. And so then he would kind of look back and then meditate and then look back and then meditate. And then eventually the Buddha image, he said, started smiling at him. And he began to get worried about this. And then eventually the Buddha began to laugh. And that was when Thaisich Rinpoche, the young boy, went to his tutor and said, "This is happening." And the tutor said, "You need to stop right now and let go of this experience and come back to the technique of meditating." And Thich Rinpoche said, "I felt really embarrassed at the time because I had made a mistake in my meditation," he said, "but I was so glad that I followed my intuition and asked my teacher about this," he said, "because if I had allowed that Buddha to start talking to me," he said, "a very different person would be sitting here and talking to you today." So it's important to work with teachers if you have the capability to do so in order to improve your meditation. Now, there are three other experiences that people often ask about. One of them is feelings of well-being. Some people use the word bliss, but I think the feelings of well-being are one. The second is clarity. And the third is periods of non-thought. So bliss, clarity, and non-thought. These three meditations are common side effects of doing shamatha meditation. And when we experience these, Sometimes in the well-being, experiencing well-being, our body might feel comfortable or our mind might feel very much at rest and at peace. And again, we might get excited thinking, oh, wow, my meditation is bearing fruit. But then that becomes a distraction and we have to label it thinking and let go of it and then return to the technique of watching the breath for a fresh start. It might seem a little discouraging to do this, but there's a reason. Because the meditation is much more important than the experience, and I'll explain why in a minute. The second kind of experience is clarity. There might be an episode in the middle of one of your meditations when you suddenly feel like everything is clearer and sharper and brighter. And this clarity can actually also make you feel a little excited and think that your meditation is bearing fruit. And then the third kind of experience is non-thought, periods of non-thought, where your mind is actually very open and very relaxed, but there's no thought arising in it. And again, all three of these experiences, bliss, clarity, and non-thought, might get you a little excited into thinking, oh, something is happening, my meditation is bearing fruit. The problem with this is that when we have an experience, it's very fresh. But then when we fixate on the experience and label it, we turn it into something stale. I know that's hard to believe, but the minute that we grasp something with our fixation, we've actually turned it into an object to look at and consider rather than being in the experience itself. We've taken a step away from the experience and begun to look at it. And this conceptuality, conceptualizing and fixating is what causes us problems. If you go back to our original teaching on the Buddha's Four Noble Truths, he said that suffering is part of life, but suffering is caused by fixation and clinging. Because if we fixate on an experience as being good or bad, then we develop expectation or anxiety about wanting that experience to happen again if it's a good one, or fearing that a bad experience will happen. And so the minute we've conceptualized something, we've turned it into an object about which we can develop hope or expectation or anxiety, hope, expectation, anxiety, or fear. Hope and fear. It's not the good kind of hope, like I hope that things go well. It's the I want that again. And so when we then introduce hope and fear into our meditation, we introduce a complication. And so this is why universally it is taught that when you experience any of these three, bliss, clarity, and non-thought, that immediately you look into the experience with your attention and let it go. And as you look into the experience and let it go, it may actually disappear, but that's not the worst thing. And here's the reason why. When we talk about development in Buddhism, in the classic teachings of the Buddha, the three levels of understanding, experience, and realization are talked about. As we develop, first we understand the Dharma, then with our intellect, then we experience it through meditation, and then finally we gain realization of what is taught. If we get stuck in experience, it can be a problem. Understanding emptiness or understanding meditation intellectually is one thing, but when we experience it, then we get confidence that meditation is real and meditation can actually really help us with our life. But if we then grasp onto the experience and hold onto it, we will never go past the experience into realization. Realization of what we have come to understand and experience is what we really want. We really want to go beyond hope and fear. We want to go beyond grasping toward experiences or fearing experiences. We want to go beyond all hope and fear and go beyond all grasping and fixation to experience the realization of our mind's basic nature. And it's not very easy to do this if we're busy grasping some experiences and fearing others. And I think you remember from last week, I spoke about the advice that was given by Kepal Sultram Jomso, a great Mahamudra meditation master, who said that when you have an experience, he says, you get a little confidence in the practice of meditation. You begin to recognize that meditation works. He says, it's as though you're walking in on a dark street and at night in a city you don't know, and you suddenly see a street sign that says that you're on the right route. If you see that street sign and recognize that you're on the right route, you'll keep going. And when I heard that story, it really impressed me. And then I added to that example the idea that clinging to an experience is like grasping the sign and hugging the sign. If you hug the sign, then you'll never finish the route. You'll never get to the destination. And this is why it's very important to let go of experiences and to continue to meditate, shared with us when we were in retreat. He said, meditation experiences, as wonderful as they may seem, he said, are really just the fruition of our positive karma. He said that from beginningless time, we have actually accumulated a great deal of positive karma, and that positive karma can come to fruition in many ways. But one of the ways it can come to fruition is through bliss, clarity, and non-thought. But the problem with this, he said, is that experience, because it is the fruition of karma, it has a limited life. It's like a flower that blooms one day and then wilts the next, like daylilies. They bloom on one day and the next day they die. And Kempo Rinpoche said that our good karma, when it comes to fruition, that karma is then exhausted. Whether that karma is negative karma that comes to fruition as suffering, or it's positive karma that comes to fruition as happiness or goodness. He said the fruition ends the karma. So if you grasp an experience which is naturally fleeting and then try to make it happen and try to make it happen and try to make it happen, for one thing, you'll never really make it happen again. Kempo Rinpoche said there are some experiences that happen in meditation that happen once and never happen again. He said that's why you can't judge your meditation by your experience or lack of experience. And in fact, he said, in Tibet, we had a saying, and that saying was that the monarch or the king of all experience is no experience at all, because then you have nothing to distract you from your meditation and you can actually continue meditating. So sorry to spend so much time on this, but I wanted to make sure you understood it fully and completely, that experiences, as wonderful as they are merely the fruition of good karma, and as such, they will be fleeting and will come to an end. And this is why it's important to let go of experience and return to the technique and strengthen your technique. So that's a little about experience. I have a couple more things to share with you today. One of those is the stages of meditation. Now, I know that many people are familiar with the large diagram that I shared last week. I found a line drawing of it, which is a little easier to see and not as complex as the color version. This, the nine stages of shamatha, many people will have seen this image of the meditator chasing their mind in the form of an elephant with a monkey leading. So these are talking about how to develop the skill of mindfulness, or drempa, which is the lasso, and Sheshin, which is alertness, which is the elephant hook. Drenpa, mindfulness, and Sheshin, alertness, are the two skills we gain in meditation. And so you're familiar with this drawing of how through the effort, that's the fire of meditation, the meditator gradually gets a grasp on their mind and the monkey slows down. And then all of the mud of drowsiness begins to go off of the elephant until the elephant is at last at peace with the meditator, which then gives rise to vipassana, or insight meditation. And we'll talk about that later. But I wanted to show this little diagram to give you an idea of the more elaborate way of staging your meditation and finding out what stage of meditation you're at. I like the simpler version of this. There is a much simpler version that doesn't use nine stages, but uses four. I like the four-stage method better because not only is it easier to remember, it's easier to illustrate. My dear friend and meditation compatriot, Amy Wells, created this beautiful handout, which I will try to post a link to on my Facebook page so you can download it. It is based on Kempo Kartha Rinpoche's book, Dharma Paths. Remember that? That's the other book I've been basing my presentation on. Dharma Paths, this is the old edition. Dharma Paths is where Kempo Rinpoche talks about these four stages. So if you want to read about them, they're in the chapter entitled, the chapter that's entitled Taming the Mind. So people often ask me, how do they know if their meditation is working? Well, one of the ways to tell whether your meditation is working is to figure out for yourself how easy it is for you to work with the technique. Because if when you're meditating, you forget the technique, and then when a thought arises, you don't know what to do, and instead you panic. This is an indication that your meditation needs a little work and that you need to learn the technique of touch and let go, where you touch the thought with your attention, label it thinking, let it go, and then return to the breath for a fresh start. So being able to remember the instructions when you need them, that's a good sign that your meditation is going well. Because if you remember, the way I've taught this meditation is that you place your attention, and then when your attention wanders, you bring it back. Now, the reason I teach it like this is because everybody is going to experience distraction. They'll start with a short period of being attentive to the breath. And I don't know how long it'll last. It may be a few seconds, it may be a minute, who knows? And then there'll be a period of wandering. And our job as meditators is to make the period of attention, the period of wandering very short. In other words, you try to notice soon into your practice of meditation, into your distraction. You try to notice it as soon as possible. Label it thinking, let it go, and return. And so as you meditate, you might notice that the period of distraction gets shorter and shorter and shorter. Now, this doesn't necessarily mean that the period of attention will get longer and longer, but at least the distractions will be shorter and dealt with more quickly. Now, beyond that, how can you tell? Well, Kempo Kartha Rinpoche, in his book, Dharma Paths, he gives these four examples. The first is a waterfall. So there's our waterfall picture. I don't know if you're going to be able to see that or not. My friends at Facebook, there's a waterfall. So here's what Rinpoche says. The first stage of meditation is the waterfall. There is tremendous activity going on in the mind, like water constantly pouring down in a waterfall. Do not feel discouraged or disappointed, realizing that you have to work to continue to practice. Without becoming annoyed or disappointed at the number of distractions, you should resolve to continue the meditation practice. Neither encourage the thoughts nor try to suppress them, but simply work on coming back to the breath. And so when people come to me and they say, I'm thinking a lot in meditation, I'm thinking a lot, I'll say, great, you're at stage one. You're doing really well. You're noticing that you're at stage one. So, yay. So this is the first stage of meditation, is we have lots of thoughts and they're rushing like water down the side of a hill. And he said, neither encourage the thoughts nor try to suppress them. Remember, we were talking about not suppressing thoughts, but merely noticing, letting them go, and returning again and again. So that's the first stage. So if you think that you're having lots of thoughts, you're at stage one. The second stage is called the meandering river in a valley. And so let's see if I can show you the meandering river in a valley. And now for the people on Facebook, this second image is the meandering river in a valley. Here's what Rinpoche says about it. The second stage of meditation is meandering river. Sometimes the valley is wide and the ground is level, so the water runs very smoothly. Sometimes there is a turn or the ground is uneven, So there is play and activity in the water. While thoughts are still arising and you still encounter distractions, they are not as frequent as they were in the beginning and not as powerful or gross. You are not so shaken by the distractions, but are able to come back to the breath quite easily. Sometimes you are able to follow the breath for some moments without any distraction. Again, you are able to come back to a stretch of calm and tranquil mind, staying attentive to the technique of following the breath. So that's the second stage of meditation, where the thoughts are slowing down. There's still play in the water, but they're slowing down and it's easier to return. The third stage of meditation is called the ocean with waves, but a lake, ocean, it's a big body of water with waves. And the illustration here is ocean waves. And here's what Rinpoche says about the ocean with waves. The ocean with waves is the third stage of meditation. While most of the time the ocean is tranquil, once in a while, large waves arise and then settle back into the ocean. For a time, the ocean takes a rest. After a while, another wave arises and again it goes back into the tranquil ocean. At this point, he said, you are able to maintain the awareness following your breath for most of the time that you're meditating, but once in a while, there are some distractions. At this point, there is not so much shakiness or uncertainty in your meditation practice. You begin to feel a sense of confidence and trust in yourself and in the practice. And I think that this is very important because what you can see growing in you as you practice is a little bit more confidence in the value of meditation and a little bit more confidence in your ability to practice the meditation. And I think that that's how it grows gradually, bit by bit. It doesn't happen all at once. And then finally, the fourth stage is the windless, waveless ocean. There's our tranquil ocean. There's our tranquil ocean. Thanks again to Amy for those illustrations. The fourth stage of meditation is the windless, waveless ocean. Rinpoche says, as you continue to practice the basic shine is the word for tranquility meditation in Tibetan. Shi means peace and ne means abiding, so calm abiding. The basic shine or shamatha is the Sanskrit term for the same thing, calm abiding. As you continue to practice the basic calm abiding meditation finally becomes stabilized, which is likened to a windless, waveless ocean. Rinpoche says, no matter how long you meditate, you can sit without distraction. There may still be some subtle thoughts, but they do not take you away from following the breath. To reach this level requires consistent and diligent practice over a long period of time, going through the various stages. And so that's a little bit about how you can evaluate your meditation to see how it's going. Now, what might happen is that on any given day, you might actually go through one, two, three, or actually all four of these stages of meditation in a single meditation practice. You might start out with lots of thoughts, but then as you practice, they may be fewer and farther between, and then maybe they'll begin to calm down, and then maybe you'll become a little agitated and it'll start up again and so on. The idea is not to become too overly encouraged and excited and not too overly discouraged, but to know that meditation has value and that it is helping you with your life and your practice and keep yourself motivated. Also, remember what we talked about last time, creating a minimum daily practice of meditation for yourself. It may just start out being 5 minutes, 10 minutes, but making it small enough that you can do it every day and every day and every day and every day. And then over time, you get confidence. I remember Kempo Rinpoche said that we shouldn't be too quick to judge our meditation. And in fact, I was sitting with him and a group of Columbus KTC Dharma friends at lunch one day, and he said, "Don't be like the impatient farmer." And of course, we had to ask him what that meant. And it turns out there's I guess, a Tibetan folk story about a person who was very impatient, the impatient farmer. This farmer was so impatient. How impatient was he? He was so impatient, Rinpoche said, that he would plant his seeds in the ground and then wait. And about 5 or 10 minutes, he would open the ground up again and look at the seed to see if it had grown any. In other words, he said he was impatient to find out whether the plant was growing, so impatient that he prevented the plant from growing because he was looking at it so much. So what Rinpoche took from this was that he said, you should not try to judge your practice from one day to the next. He said, you won't see the improvement in a single day. He said, over days, weeks, months, and years, you will see an improvement. And this was in keeping with the example that had been given by the Dzogchen Ponlop Rinpoche when he taught at KTD Monastery a number of years ago. And he said, the mistake we make is that we think our meditation should continuously improve. When he says it's more like the stock market, in that it's up one day and down the next, but the general trend is up. So we can take encouragement from those examples. So as we progress, we might be able to also judge our progression by noticing the actual technique changing over time. When Kempo Carter Rinpoche taught about meditation in 1988, at Karma Triana Dharma Chakra, KTD Monastery in New York, he taught that when we teach people meditation at the KTCs, he said, you might be able to notice that over time, they're able to change their actual technique. Now, do you remember when we talked about the technique? We talked about in-breath, following the breath in and following the breath out. We spoke about counting in-breath, out breath, count one, in breath, out breath, count two, and so on. And we also talked about keeping our gaze downward, keeping a downward gaze. Rinpoche said these four props, he didn't call them props, I use that word, these four helpers for our attentiveness can gradually be relinquished as we practice. And this will also help us tell how we're doing. The first one, he said, will usually be counting. He said, your people will probably stop counting first. In other words, we're attentive to the breath all the way in, we're attentive to the breath all the way out, and then we count. And so we might drop the counting first and then only be attentive to the in-breath and the out-breath. Then eventually, he said, they might be able to drop the attention to the in-breath and only be attentive to the out-breath. Only be attentive to the out-breath. And then he said, eventually, he said, they may be able to let go of the attention to the out-breath and merely be aware of the sensation of the air as it comes and goes right at the nostrils. And then finally, he said, they may be able to raise the gaze to level as opposed to having it downward. So this is what I let people know, that over time you can actually see that your meditation is progressing by how many props that you need under your attention. Now, to be fair, even after many, many years of meditating, I still need to count sometimes when I start out. And so when I start out a session, sometimes I'll start with counting, but then drop it and then gradually be able to meditate with the technique and so on. So that's another way to tell. But be ready and be free to go back to any of the methods that you need. Don't say, oh, well, I've gone beyond counting. I'll never need to count again. Don't be like that. It's better to know that you have it as a way of helping your meditation. It's better to have that than to not have that. So always have it at your ready. I see we're coming to the top of the hour, and I have one more topic to discuss. Let's do this. It looks like we're going to have to go to one more part, and then we'll be done. I thought I was going to finish this week. Not lucky, because people often ask, well, what's next? After you do a shamatha meditation, what's your next practice? And Kempa Karth Rinpoche was actually asked this question by a visiting KTC who saw him at KTD Monastery many years ago. And he said, if you have tamed your grosser mental afflictions, then it's important for you to move on in your practice, or your shamatha practice or your tranquility practice might stagnate. Now, this really was important information for me, because what this meant was that there actually is, number one, there's something that follows shamatha meditation. There's more practice that you can do following shamatha. And number two, that there's such a thing as stagnant shamatha. What's that? And so I think that this is what we'll start with next week. And I promise we'll finish the topic next week. Because what do you do with the mindfulness once you develop it? What do you do with the mindfulness, the drenpa, and the alertness, the sheshen? What do you do with those two tools once you've developed them? How do you begin to work with your mental afflictions? And so I think that's where we'll start next week. We'll talk about what happens when you've begun to tame your grosser mental afflictions, and how to tell when it's time to move on to another practice, and then what practice to move on to. Hint, it has to do with compassion. And how to put your mindfulness in the service of your Dharma practice. So, and I will also talk about stagnant shamatha. I have several quotations from Kempo Karth Rinpoche explaining what it is and how to avoid it. So we'll talk about that next time. Yeah, I got just a little bit more to do. So we'll cover those next week. Once again, thank you for being here and being so attentive. And also thank you in advance for any questions you might send. I hope I was able to address the question by the lady who had the experience of thinking that there was a person in the room with her, that these types of little fantasy episodes do happen as our mind is relaxing, and that one of the ways to work with that is to notice it, label it, thinking just like anything else, and then return to the technique of meditation for a fresh start. So, remember, we are practicing the three excellences. Excellent at the beginning. We dedicated this practice and session together to the benefit of all sentient beings. Good in the middle. We were attentive, even though it got confusing sometimes and may have been boring. We were patient with the presentation. And then finally, good at the end, we'll dedicate the merit of our practice to all sentient beings. And so we'll sit quietly for just a moment and mentally dedicate the merit to all sentient beings, making the aspiration that all beings are free from suffering of all kinds, come to happiness, and then to awakening. And coming to this awakening, may they benefit all sentient beings endlessly. We'll mentally dedicate the goodness with this thought in mind. Okay, thank you. And I just remembered it's Mother's Day. Thank you, all of those who are mothers in this lifetime. Thanks to my mom, who has passed away a number of years ago. I'm so happy that I became a person here and got to meet the Dharma. We have a lot to be thankful for. And thank you to all you moms who look after us. We need looking after sometimes. So thank you for that. And then also, thank you to all mother sentient beings who have been our mothers in previous lifetimes and are now the people in our lives today. So thank you to all sentient beings. So I will say bye-bye for now. Om mani padme hum, karma pacheno. Please practice every day. Try to practice a little meditation every day. And then we will see you next week, 1 o'clock, here on Facebook and YouTube.
Thank you for joining us for this week's Dharma Talk. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. If you did, please subscribe, rate, and review it on iTunes. To learn more about the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling or to donate to support our Dharma Talk series, please visit our website at columbusktc.org. The opening and closing music for the podcast is Tibetan Flute Song by Tamding Arts at tamdingarts.com. Please join us again next week for another Dharma Talk.